I'm going to take a little bit of a different approach, and I'm sorry I missed the first part because I was practicing what I preach. I was giving a radio interview. So, the charge I was asked in this session was, how do we communicate to the general public? And it really depends on us to do that. I think Diane mentioned publications, scientific journals, and everybody thinks that's the end-all, and that's probably only a third of the effort that we should be doing when we do our research. It's the remaining part that's for getting that information out to the public. And you may ask why. Well, I got a scientific journal, I can tick it off on my achievement summary, get my raise, or no raise. my dean's here, so. it's really, if we're going to depend upon funding from the federal agencies, Carl talked about educating people up on the Hill, but it's really educating the public, because those are the voters, and they help impress upon the politicians what's priority issues. And also, I hear a lot of whining about the lack of graduate students or recruitment. Well, it's getting that information out to the public to get to the K through 12 schools, and that really translates to build up our sciences and how recruit students. So I need to also acknowledge my daughter, Sarah Rice. She was a journalism student, graduated from K-State, has been working out in the field, and so she provided some comments and feedback and has kind of helped educate me on some of the things, and she doesn't hold back any terms there. Okay. So, as I stated, we are responsible for providing science-based information to the public for the reasons I mentioned. And I'm going to go through several different ways that we can do that. One is a very active role. And I'm talking about the public sector here, not Hill or science presentations. But there's an active role, public speaking at civic organizations. How many of you have given talks to Rotary or Optimist Club or Lions Club? Great. Those are means. You never know who's going to be listening and has may have an impact on that. So I rarely turn down an opportunity to give a talk at Lions and Rotary and Optimists and whoever else. Those are important avenues to convey your science. Now, it takes a different type of activity or relation building and presenting that information, but it's really critical. K through 12 schools. K-State has a presidential lecture series. The last several years I've volunteered for that, and so it's a recruitment too for K-State, but it's an opportunity to get into the high schools and educate those students about, you know, climate change or wheat breeding or, you know, some of the things that are important to us, but get out there and get to those students. We've had, and I'm going to give my personal experiences here, but we've had extremely amount of success having kids' field days. Every September, we have, I set up a soil microbiology setting where we have 20 students every 20 minutes for 4 hours, whatever that amounts to be. It's an extremely exhausting morning, but I'll tell you what, I've had students come to me, I see them in the community, and they say, oh yeah, I heard you, I saw you. I have parents come to me and teachers come to me and say, that was great. They really like the talking about the microbes that they eat through yogurt and cheese and that, and it exists in the soil. So it really made a surprising impact, and so we've continued that success. And that translates then, these are third, fourth, and fifth graders, and if you keep their attention for 20 minutes and they rotate around, you've done a good service, and maybe future scientists. But at least you've made a more informed public community out there. Science classes. Every year through my daughter, I taught a science class from first grade all the way up to high school, and I continue to do that. Don't turn down those opportunities. I'll tell you what, I found I don't want to be a seventh grade teacher teaching science all day. I did one day for, I don't know, four or five sessions, and I just did it for one day, and I have to do it whole school year. It would have been exhausting for me. And then current issues, again, through high schools, you know, there's lots of opportunities now for our societies to participate. There's a lot of big issues, sustainability, biofuels, climate change, biosecurity. I mean, that's just a partial list, and those are the ones I'm familiar with. But, you know, you can be called in and talk about those to the high school current issues classes and that. So take advantage of those opportunities. Media, this is the one where I got a lot of advice from my daughter, but it's taken many years of practice and trial and error. Four key points here, and I'll elaborate since we have a little bit more time to talk about them. But be timely and concise to the reporters. They are on a strict timeline. A lot of times they'll call me at 1 o'clock because they got a due date or a due time at 5 o'clock to get an article in. Okay, so when you get an email or phone call, try to return it as soon as possible. And what that has done, I've done that, and then that generates a good rapport with those reporters, and they're willing to call me back on other issues later on, so that you be responsive and helpful to them. You know, they're journalism, political science, history majors, and have very a lot of times have very little knowledge of science. I always, in our community, since we have a lot of rural population, but then we can have some of the students, the journalism students or the journalists coming from urban areas, I try, if I can work it into the discussion, to find out what their background is. Did they grow up on a farm, or do they family have a farm? That gives you a different context than if they grew up in inner city Chicago or Kansas City. And then I try to adjust my discussion with them based on their knowledge. Keep the message clear and simple. Try to relate the information on a personal level, not only on their personal level, but who they're writing for. If the paper is for Kansas City, then that's a different, I use different examples than if I'm talking to the Garden City, I forgot now what it is, but which is a rural community out in southwestern Kansas. The audience is going to be different. Or the New York Times. I've spent several sessions with a reporter from New York Times. That's going to be a much different audience than even the Kansas City. So you need to relate that. Some examples. And Diane mentioned this, talk about impacts. Well, I've had try to show the impact of your research to the reporter who's writing for that paper. For example, how much carbon can be sequestered in soil would offset a particular power plant. Okay, we have a Jefferies Energy Center. And so I've had to, okay, it would take this many acres to offset those carbon emissions. That's an example. Or if we're talking about water quality, why that water is important downstream, flood control, whatever, to the communities downstream, or water availability. So try to relate it to the audience of that paper. Okay, and adapt the knowledge base and interest level. Again, that's partly what I was saying, but also if I'm working with a reporter from a farm journal or Scientific American or, you know, a paper, again, that's figure out who your audience of that paper is, or not only the reporter. See, there was something else. It's easier with print. A lot of times, my daughter tells me they're not supposed to give you a draft of the article they've written. They're taught not to do that. I've been fortunate many times, particularly the farm journals, they'll send me the draft of the article, and I have the opportunity to correct it, some misconceptions. But a lot of times you won't have the opportunity. Don't be offended, and they'll get it wrong sometimes. They'll misquote you or misunderstanding you didn't convey the message. But that's the way they're taught. But if you get a chance to edit it, help them out. Don't be condescending. And so I kind of say, well, maybe you should say it this way or strike out a word or so. You don't want to rewrite the whole article for them, because their job is to write the article. I've had a little bit of opportunity with radio. To get into the business, the best opportunity is with our university radio. They do a tape, so they can edit out, and I've got a good rapport with our the radio people, and we'll sit there and chat, but he can cut out things that I didn't mean to say, or he'll flub or I'll flub, and so that's easy. We were just down with AgriTalk this morning, and that was live, so you just gotta, if you can practice by a taping audience, that's easier, and then you can get into the live situations, and then there's the TV, and then you're definitely live, and you gotta be careful how you hold your hands and everything, so ease into it. Go print radio and then TV, my advice. The other thing is, another way to work out, reach out, is through university media relations. They can be extremely useful resource. How many of you know that there's university media relations for those that are university? Okay, how many don't know? Okay, they can be extremely useful for getting items out. They're anxious to get items out to represent the university. The nice thing about that is they will write, you can be interviewed or send them a draft, they'll write it, and then you do get to check it most of the time. And so that's a way to get the material out. And then they get it out to the newspapers. And they, again, how they relate to the news organizations, they'll get picked up by TV, radio, and print. So that's a way to do that where you have some control. Be sure to check for accuracies. When you get to particularly university media relations, check for accuracies. There's a, I hope I don't offend anybody, but there was a University of Illinois study, press just released an article, and here's the title. A study reveals that nitrogen fertilizers deplete organic carbon. I read the article. I'm not sure that's not the conclusion in the article, is really excessive nitrogen fertilizer maybe deplete organic carbon, but the headline was nitrogen fertilizer is deplete soil, organic carbon is bad for the soil. I think you got to be careful. You got to interpret how the public is going to view that. And so already this article has caused me great headaches. we're gonna have to respond to that. But again, that's one you have some control over. So those are the active, what I call the active ways. There's passive ways, websites. I heard somebody say the other month ago that websites are getting passe. You know, they're getting old. If you're going to have a website, keep it current. And I'm probably guilty as much as anybody else. But there's nothing worse than having all the stuff from 2004 up on the website. You need to keep it current and have them actively involved in updating that. Brochures. We got a brochure. It's probably a top seller. We don't sell it, but one called Top 10 Questions on Soil Carbon Sequestration. And I hand that out a lot, and we're through our third or fourth printing on that. And we got even now to a Spanish version. It's a full trifold copied off of David Letterman, you know, Top 10 Questions. And just real simple 2-3 sentences for each bullet item. And it's extremely popular. I've handed out to press, but I hand it out to up on the hill and every other person that I see. Electronic newsletters. These are extremely useful. I have the fortunate opportunity to, I've hired a press relations person in our group, and Steve Watson produces, I don't know if he's going to show up, it comes out about every 2 to 4 weeks. Electronic newsletter, the Soil Carbon Climate Change News. It has pertinent information, contact information up there, and then just bullet items. And then if you scroll through this newsletter, then it has maybe a paragraph describing certain items. We send that out. It was really intended for county agents and consultants in the state of Kansas. And then people got wind of it. We sent it to a subscription. Basically, people up on the Hill, staffers get it. They've requested it. Other agencies, some news organizations, and it's gone international now. I don't have the complete list, but it goes into New Zealand researchers and organizations, Australia, Brazil. So it's become quite popular, and so it's a source of information that's supplied to the public. And again, if you get out to county extension agents, they can take those blurbs and put them in the local newspapers. Okay, so to summarize, a couple key points here. Maintain objectivity in order to be scientifically credible. I won't name any names, but even on our campus, surprisingly, we got scientists that are pushing their particular agenda, and I think they lose some credibility if they don't provide a balanced approach. You can be, obviously you have your right as a citizen, but then you lose some of the scientific credibility, I think, if you don't be credible and objective. Need to provide information on research impacts, implications at the personal level, relate to the local or the region level in order to get more coverage and readership. Again, be timely. Now I've got a relation, now I get good or bad, I get reporters calling me to follow up on articles, you know, 6 months ago or 3 months ago, and it keeps it current, and then it keeps the information in the public eye. And then finally, I guess my motive is to, when I do this activities, is that I feel that's part of my responsibility is to provide public education for the research that we do. And that translates to a better informed public, hopefully at least more opportunities for supporting science, and then that gets up on the Hill and funding mechanisms for science to continue our work. So it's not the last item on your checklist that you should do. It should be higher up on the priority list in my estimation. So with that, if you have any questions, you can contact me and follow up. And I guess we got discussion after that now, right? Thank you.